The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Quarter zip season. Got the memo.
Season. Hey,
love it.
So we're keeping track. Do we have a chart back there, Koobs, where we are counting how many quarter zips we've seen so far today? Because all we've done is get ridicule.
Kirby. Hypo.
Hype.
Hart.
Five. Sand. Starting lineup.
If you know, you know. Quarter zip season. Quickly before we go to phones, how good has that Tennessee staff been and Hendon Hooker been this year? Tim Banks does not get enough credit for what he's done with that Tennessee defense. When you think about the fact that you got a linebacker starting at Alabama, linebacker starting at Michigan State, defensive end starting, playing a lot at Miami. I mean, the bodies that they lost on that side of the ball, for him to be able to make them even formidable average this year was going to be a great accomplishment, and they've been well past that. And then Hendon Hooker, Greg, 70% on the year, 24 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, over 2,400 yards passing. He's added another 480 rushing. He's
amazing.
He's been, and he wasn't the guy going into the season.
He was third string, according to people. You talk to people coming out of camp, they're like, yeah, he might be three. Like, what? I thought he was going to be one. What do you mean he's three? I've been so proud of Tennessee's team offensively. I think the biggest thing we talked about at Media Days, like, the one thing I want to see from Tennessee this year, establish an identity, and please just try to get to a bowl game, because it'd be huge for the young guys.
Absolutely.
Well, they have an identity, and they're going bowling. Job well done by Josh Heupel and company. They've done an amazing job.
Tony in Florida is going to join us. Welcome into the show, Tony.
Well, good afternoon, G Mac and Cole. Y'all doing a good job.
Thank you,
my friend.
All right. First off, Richard from Atlanta was a Gator. I just thought you might like to know that.
Okay.
Well, I was trying to figure what was going on. I mean, I've never seen a guy whose team's number one is beating the heck out of everybody, and that the team stinks. We need a new quarterback. I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, you know, you can talk to all the people watching this show. They can say whether Georgia hasn't played anybody or has played anybody, but I believe that anybody that hasn't played Georgia or Ohio State really hasn't played anybody. So there's that. But I wanted to say that there's no denying, I mean, anybody watching this show knows that a monster is being built in Athens, and it's growing. And if you look at Alabama and Georgia's recruiting, even the year 22 coming up, we are devouring the top 300 of the ESPN top 300. So there's a monster being built over here in Athens. And the guy in Atlanta, just take a chill pill. Everything is going to come out just right.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate that call. I understand that there's not maybe an Oregon over Ohio State, or what Michigan State was when they knocked off Michigan on that Georgia schedule. But Kentucky, 8-win football team. Tennessee, Missouri, South Carolina, Auburn above 500. Arkansas, 7-win football team. Think about what that Clemson game was when they played it.
Yeah.
It might not be that now, but that doesn't mean that you can approach it the way you would now when you had to then. So I actually think Georgia has one of the more difficult schedules in the nation because of what it is collectively. Just because you don't have the one big signature win of a team that was ranked in the top five when you knocked them off, I actually think Georgia deserves a lot of credit for what their schedules end up being this year.
My evaluation of these teams, yes, does it matter who you've played? Of course. Yeah, we're going to take that into account when we look at the season's end and what teams became and who you beat them, what they were then, where they're at now, etc. Just look at the game control. Look at the dominance. Okay, I can understand very much, well, they haven't played anybody, they haven't beaten anybody. Okay, well, some people have said, well, Cincinnati hasn't played anybody either. And yet they're in close games every week against the likes of Tulsa and Tulane and Navy and others. Georgia has played to a standard this year. And that's why I love them so much, because they have played to their own standard. Didn't matter what Missouri was like. Didn't matter what anyone else on the schedules looked like. They said, we're going to play Georgia brand of football, and that's going to be a beatdown in our favor on a week-in, week-out basis. So it's been so impressive to watch.
That was a wonderful dissertation on the Georgia schedule. I just want to commend you on that.
That was a short one.
I-Man joins the show now. Welcome
Uh-oh,
into the
come
show.
Come on, I-Man.
Live from the capital city, the cradle of Confederacy. Guys, good afternoon.
How are you, I-Man? How are you today?
I'm doing well. Y'all two are my favorites on the SEC network, ESPN. you'll break down games. I think you're as impartial as you can be. And I, you know, I tried to throw all kind of hand grenades at Greg one other time he was on the show. But I tell you, when he gets to the line, he audibles with them 12-letter words as good as any other man I've ever seen.
You got a mean curveball, though, brother. I gotta make sure I'm on my toes. I got to move up in the box and crowd the plate when you're on the mound, that's for sure.
Well, after the phone call, I thought, you know, Max, well served, but you did well. And, Cole, I think you played every position on the Auburn line while you was at Auburn, didn't you?
Not all of them, though. I was not talented enough to play tackle. I didn't want to be on that island. I would have gotten run over. So
I stayed inside. Big interior guy.
Stayed inside.
But I do. I love the way you guys break down the game. It's more for the common people to understand the game. And not everybody needs all the football talk. But that being said, you're sitting here looking at the Iron Bowl. I see Alabama as a pretty dominant favorite in this game. Let me ask you something, Cole, and Greg as well. It's maybe a two-part question. What I see, Auburn's working with what they got, doing the best they can with what they got. But it seems like when Auburn goes cold on offense, it just drops, and it affects the defense. And I thought there was two or three games that Auburn could have won, Penn State, A&M, and Carolina. They should have. Maybe Penn State was a graft that was early in the season. And then the second part of my question is, what in the world happened to Nebraska? When Nebraska, because there's several of us sit around and talk about football quite a bit, we always thought when Nebraska went to the Big Ten, they would be right in the thick of the competitiveness there. And they're not. It's just not the Nebraska that we remember.
I don't think we'll ever see the Nebraska that you and I remember, that once was so great. I always tell people, because obviously, I love talking about offensive line play. 95 Nebraska, still the standard of offensive line play. Zach Wiegert, Aaron Taylor, those guys were just, it was pure dominance. And it was beautiful to watch. And we'll go back to that just a moment.
95, you said?
95 Nebraska. Standard. Steamrolled everybody. I don't believe you were born then, but it was fun to watch. It was just when I was getting into football. And so, yeah, it meant a lot.
You're putting your hand in the date.
Put your hand into a date.
They did that back then. Corey Schlesinger and those fullbacks.
Did they go four-point stance on the O-line back then?
No.
Two hands?
No.
No?
When they got near the goal line, they did.
Thank you.
a lot of tight ends, a lot of fullbacks back in the day.
Oh, boy.
Corey Schlesinger had that giant neck roll. It was like he had a pillow behind his shoulder pads, fullback. Oh, God, they were fun to watch.
Honestly, I'd rather watch paint dry than watch triple option.
No,
football.
not that one. Not Tommy Frazier and Lawrence Phillips and Amon Green and those guys. They did it different.
They were serious.
They did it different. But back to the points with Auburn, and Greg and I have spent a lot of time this football season discussing this team. And I think part of what you said was so accurate early on that Mike Bobo and Brian Harsin, they were just piecemealing that offense together.
They were.
Taking some tight ends. I mean, these were tight ends that Auburn fans didn't even know were alive at the beginning of the season because Malzahn didn't use that part of the offense very much. And they found a way to get them into the game plan, implemented them in, took a few games, and then right around the LSU game, I think Bobo and Harsin said, what does our quarterback do best? Well, he's tough. He's durable. He's got great wheels. Well, let's use it. And then they implemented that into the game plan. That began to work. That opened up some more things downfield. That got the confidence going. The offensive line's gotten a little bit better over the course of the season. And, Greg, I can't explain why the identity has seemed to gone away at certain times here in the last few weeks. I don't know if it's a trust factor. I do think that's a very real part of it, especially when you change quarterbacks. You don't call the same plays. You don't have faith that the same routes are going to work, that the protections will be the same, especially when you don't have the same escapability and – you don't have those quarterback runs to add in that can make a defense play you the way you want them to play you. So depth is a huge part of this, especially on defense. But I don't know exactly where the disconnect is with this offense the last maybe month.
And this is kind of the way I've kind of described it with Auburn. When I watch them, when the stars align and everyone on their team plays good football, you get Arkansas. That's the game you get. You get Ole Miss. That's the game you get. You get second half against LSU where miraculous plays were being made by several people in different spots. But sometimes when I watch them, When the offensive line's going good, the running backs aren't going good. When the quarterback's going good, the wide receivers aren't going good. It's like, oh man, we got the run game going, so the receivers take a couple snaps, series off. And all of a sudden, it's just odd. It's like they can't ever, all 11 offensively, be playing at a really high level together. When it clicks, it's a thing of beauty. But it hasn't clicked often enough, and I just can't, for whatever reason, figure out why the inconsistencies have occurred. Because it's almost like mind-boggling at times.
You could almost take that into halves as well. Mississippi State, first half, pass rush, absent second half. And then you go back to this past week against South Carolina, defensive line, very active first half, almost gone in the second half.
Right.
Certain position groups just seem to flash and then disappear at certain times. It's a new team, it's a new scheme, it's a new coaching staff, so some of that you expect, but not near as much this late in the season. Let's go to Mary in Birmingham. She wants to join the show. Welcome in, Mary.
Hey, Cole and Greg. I'm so happy to talk to y'all. Greg, I love you. I know you are Alabama through and through, but sometimes I just want to say, Greg, Eastler, you're Alabama. You know, you are Alabama. You rate. I really do love you. But I wanted to ask what your thoughts are on Georgia and Alabama. Do you really think we have a chance when it comes to Georgia? I love Alabama.
Thank you so much, Mary. We love you as well. Roll Tide.
I feel left out.
Yeah, I don't care what Cole feels. I'm going to use Nick Saban's playbook here. Why are we talking about Georgia? What? We can't be talking about Georgia right now. It's the Iron Bowl week, man. We can't be thinking about what's coming next week, because when that happens, you have circumstances like, I'm trying to think of a good example. 2017.
17 would be the first one that comes to
mind. Probably the best one, but at that point, Alabama had not punched their ticket to the SEC championship game. I guess you could say it to a certain extent, maybe a slightly lesser expense.
Throwing a screen to Ed Sism, Jarrett Holmes, game-winning field goal, that one come to mind. I would say 2000, but that was a three-win Alabama team that we beat that year, so that one probably wouldn't really play in to the discussion that we're attempting to have here. But we could find other examples if we needed to.
Well, I remember us in 2009 being excellent, cooking on many levels, both offensively and defense, especially that part of the season. That day in Jordan-Hare was the biggest grind in the world. And they had no business in the game being close in the fourth quarter. None. The personnel was not favorable for Auburn that day. Defensively, offensively, we were better across the board. And yet, we got our back against the wall with 7 minutes left in the game.
Javier Arenas, man.
It's a difficult, difficult, difficult game. So I would say that, Mary, as an Alabama fan and as someone that knows the dangers of going to play in Jordan-Hare, let's focus on this one. let's put on our crimson glasses. Let's focus on this one this week before we start thinking about Georgia. We'll get to that, of course, next week when we start to preview the SEC championship game. Still so many of your phone calls to get to. 855-242-PAUL. Going to dive a little deeper into some of these matchups between ACC and SEC opponents. Will it just mean more again this year? We certainly hope so.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back to the Feinbaum Show. Cole Kublik alongside Greg McElroy. Appreciate you guys being with us. It's been a wonderful first 2 hours and 19 minutes here on the Feinbaum Show. It is rivalry week, and we are counting up not just the amount of haters on our quarter zips, but we're also counting up the amount of coaches and or people of significance that have worn quarter zips. So far today, as you can see on the bottom line, and for those of you that are listening, Cole and I both wearing quarter zips have taken a lot of ridicule. I refuse to take ridicule on the quarter zip. It's the gentleman's, it's athleisure wear. Gentlemanly
you
athleisure.
You feel a lot of dissertations today.
Gentlemanly
the quarter
athleisure.
Zip dissertation is not the one anybody was anticipating.
It's gentlemanly
myself.
Athleisure. All right. You look at
look that roster.
Cole and I, Kirby Smart, Tom Hart, Josh Heupel, and Nick Saban, all seen wearing quarter zips during their press conferences and/or on the show today.
And we got what, hour and a half to go.
Huh.
Imagine
we'll be double digit no time.
All the Q zips we're going to see here for the rest of the show.
Uh-oh. All right, a lot of telephone calls we're wanting to get to, that's for sure. 855-242-PAUL. It's the heart and soul of the Feinbaum Show, and we are not going to deny you that heart and soul. Cole, where are we going?
We're going to Frank in Queens. You got to get back into this Florida coaching situation. Frank, how are you?
He refuses to be ridiculed about quarter zips. But what about not being able to beat out Mark Sanchez in a quarterback duel?
Whoa!
We'd be ridiculed for that, Greg?
I think that's fair. I was
Greg.
I was the 206th pick in the NFL drafts. Sanchez was 5.
I was
little gap there, about 200 picks or so.
All right, we'll go to Tim in Indiana wants to talk college coaches changing places. Welcome into the show, Tim.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I just got a couple quick questions. I'll hang up and listen. I'm curious about what happens to these coaches that are at high-profile schools once they leave the schools, like Mullen and Orgeron, and why would Stoops want to leave Kentucky for a job where he would be there maybe 2 years unless he does something incredible and he'd be out of the job?
Thanks for the call, Tim. I'll start with Mark Stoops, and I'm with you 100%. I think he has one of the best jobs in college football. I'm not saying the Kentucky job is always going to be one of the best jobs in college football, but they ain't running him out of town anytime soon. He's got an elevator in his contract every year that he's there, that he's retained, no matter what he did. Raise.
Yes.
Huh? How's it getting better than that? They're recruiting the portal well. It's not just getting guys out of the portal. Getting guys from the portal that come in and contribute and make your team different. Vince Merrill's a member of that staff. He's done an amazing job. Now with Liam Cohen, what he's doing as offensive coordinator, Brad White, an underrated defensive coordinator. All the staff changes that Mark has made seemingly have worked out well. Even when he had to get rid of Eddie Grand, Eddie's back on the staff now just because he likes being around those guys so much. He's done an excellent job. You look at what they've done through the draft, bowl games they've been to, the amount of wins he's piling up. I wouldn't leave. I think Lexington's a beautiful place. I love the Kentucky fan base. I think they are as dialed into football as they've ever been right now. I don't know why you'd want to walk away from it. Me personally, I don't. And I'll just give you this. We had Ed Orgeron against Arkansas a couple weeks ago, and Tom Hart and I asked him, what do you do when this is over? And his response was, 2 months, white sand, blue water.
Translation?
You won't see him for a while after this thing ends. He's going to the beach.
Where's he going?
He wouldn't tell us.
Which beach?
He would not tell us. But he's going to have a lot of money to get there and a lot of money to spend while he's there. So I don't blame him. Ed Orgeron's not going to be able to not coach, though. Dan Mullen's not going to be able to not coach. Now, I could see Dan in maybe an NFL offensive coordinator role just because now you're straight X's and O's. But both of those guys, they're not going to be able to not coach. No way.
My thing about the Kentucky job, back to what you were saying, it's a place that does perhaps have a moderate ceiling on it. Does it mean that you can't win a national championship there? No, you can. You could. Stars aligned. They've won 10 games. You got to beat Georgia. You're going to have opportunity if you win the East, play in the SEC championship game, win the SEC championship game. Yeah, you can get to the playoff, win a national championship. It can be done. Crazier things have happened. Is it likely? No, it's a lot easier to do it in Florida. I mean, it's just the ultimate, this is what it is. It's easier to win a national championship at places that have won national championships before.
Also easier to get fired.
Correct. There's some, you don't mess with happy. This is going to sound crazy. You don't.
This is a married man with children speaking.
With Happy. You don't do it. All right. You do not mess with Happy. And if there is something going, you have the right recipe for a particular place, why would you leave? I wouldn't. If I were Mark Stoops, knowing the access that I have to Ohio, the access that I have already to facilities and what they've already committed to the program, we're winning good, doing a great job. We're recruiting guys with low egos that don't come in here and expect all this NIL opportunity and all this other stuff. I think it's a heck of a good job.
Now, they've got an indoor facility coming, and a lot of folks haven't been able to go to a lot of the facilities around college football like you and I have. Kentucky is upper tier as far as their football facilities, not including indoor. But the coaches' offices, the weight room, the locker room, there are not a lot of teams that are that much better than Kentucky.
Yeah.
And they've actually had it for a while, so they were a little bit ahead of the curve. What they did to Kroger Field with the improvements there were fantastic. It was exactly what needs to be done. I think Vanderbilt should go copy that model and do something similar to their stadium. That way you don't have to try to dump $1 billion into a brand new stadium. It can be done. Kroger Field proved to you you can take a stadium that's in rough shape, clean it up, change it, alter it, and all of a sudden it can be a great place to go watch a game. The environment's great there in Lexington to go be a part of a game. So there is a lot to love and a lot to like being the Kentucky head football coach. I personally wouldn't walk away from it. I think Coach Stoops has a magnificent deal. Let's get to Matt in San Antonio. Wants to join in. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing good, Bert. You remember me, guys, last time when I first came to this show, I contacted you about Texas A&M football. Well, I got a statement to make. We're going to whoop the living heck out of LSU when we're going to Baton Rouge. They suck. We're better than they are as a football team. And, Greg, I wonder your thoughts on the quarterback battle going next year with Zach Izada, Haynes King, Eli Sowers, and the five-star bringing in.
Appreciate it, Matt. I think that is going to be, by the way, and you're on the call for that game, correct?
Yes.
Booth or field?
Field, by myself.
Back to the outhouse. All right, sounds good. All right, help me understand that matchup, because if I'm going based exclusively on what I've seen from the team, I don't trust LSU. I don't trust them at all. Now, there have been good moments, even in the back end, and this being the swan song for Ed Ogeron, maybe we get his final stand. But I have a difficult time thinking that they can play four quarters with a team right now in A&M that's angry, that's frustrated, that's trying to get back on and finish on what is a really high note.
I was a little miffed, a little concerned when I watched the ULM film from last week, and it was all Max Johnson, because I felt like the previous week when we had the Arkansas game, they could not wait to get to Garrett Nussmeier. And he did some good things. There are inconsistencies, but he offered you a little bit more mobility, maybe a little bit of a quick trigger. You go back to Max against Alabama. I had a real problem getting the ball out on time late against Alabama. But Durante Jones did an amazing job with that defensive plan, and that's what's going to have to be there. Because you go back to how Ole Miss played A&M defensively, changed some things up. Linebackers were flashing to the line of scrimmage pretty quick. They caused some confusion, commotion. LSU's got to find a way to put the game in Zach Calzada's hands. They cannot let that stable of backs and that offensive line take that game over. Maybe throw in a little Jalen Weidermeyer into that mix, but Spiller and company can't take that game over. If they do, I don't think LSU can hang in the game. If they make A&M one-dimensional and force Calzada to beat them, they still got – Dwight McLaughlin played amazing against Arkansas. They call it DBU for a reason, because there's falling out of trees there in Baton Rouge. They just show, you go play corner at LSU, you're going to know how to cover people. Cordell Flatt's still on that team. They got guys who can cover. I don't know exactly what we're going to get from LSU offensively. Is it going to be a dominant Ty Davis Price like it was in Tuscaloosa or like it was against Florida? Or is it going to be like it was against Arkansas? I don't know, but they need the run game and they need to make Texas A&M one-dimensional.
Yeah, I think it's really going to come down to A&M. What, can they run the football? I mean, simple as that. If LSU's defensive front plays like they did against Alabama, the game becomes a lot more competitive.
Absolutely.
We'll find out. A lot more of your phone calls at 855-242. Paul, got to get into the playoff discussion. Talk about some of these teams with big games coming up this weekend and how it impacts the SEC. We'll do it next on the Feinbaum Show.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Feinbaum Show. Cole Kublik, Greg McElroy with you. It's Rivalry Week. Welcome everybody in. 855-242-PAUL. Going to take a lot of phone calls here in the next 90 minutes that we have remaining here on the show. We also want to get to some of these matchups coming up this weekend. But we also told you that we are going to get into a little bit of playoff discussion. Not going to be outrageous. We're going to do just a little bit of it. I want to get everyone prepared for a situation that I think is very real. Okay?
Oh, boy.
Are y'all ready for this? I'm not doing the age-old Feinbaum way of lining the world on fire either. This is like this. It's not like Feinbaum back in Birmingham either. All right? This is like real. I actually think that there's a pathway for this to happen.
I'm just going to sit back.
Are you prepared?
Yeah.
It's not a dissertation. Back. It's going to be quick.
Okay, good.
All right. I would be surprised if 2 weeks from now we will know the playoff rankings. Of 13 days from now is Selection Day. I would be surprised if Notre Dame doesn't get strong consideration from the committee for one of the four spots.
Not very crazy.
Not crazy. All right, scale 1 to 5 crazy.
1.5.
Okay,
it's
not crazy at all.
The ACC has essentially eliminated themselves. The Pac-12 has essentially eliminated themselves. If you want to make the argument that a 2-loss Wake, a 2-loss Pitt, a 2-loss Oregon, a 3-loss Utah might deserve an opportunity to be in as a conference champion, are you taking any of those over a 2-loss SEC champion Alabama?
A 2-loss SEC runner-up Alabama.
Yeah, sorry. 2-loss Alabama team that loses to Georgia in the SEC championship game, because I think that's worst-case scenario for the SEC. Best-case scenario for the SEC would be Georgia losing the SEC title game and both those teams having one loss, and obviously none of those teams are getting in over those two teams.
No way.
So I think with what has happened to the Pac-12 and the ACC, it is very feasible that Notre Dame could be in that discussion. Absolutely.
I think Notre Dame is going to be the biggest beneficiary to the chaos that could come up. We have two playoff elimination games this weekend. One is Ohio State and Michigan. Losers out. All right. Winner goes to the Big Ten championship game. They'll face Wisconsin. The winner of the Big Ten championship game, assuming it will be Michigan and or Ohio State, which I think is a fair assumption.
Probably in. Yes.
Oh,
Wisconsin getting a little bit better offensively.
Wisconsin's
last
better.
Weeks, but they've also played Northwestern, Rutgers, and Indiana, I think. So.
Correct. Yeah, that'll do it.
It helps. It's like Ohio State playing Michigan State and being able to throw for 500
Whoa,
yards.
Michigan State, top 7 football team. Don't you do it.
130th is 130th in pass defense,
correct.
No matter how you spin it.
Western Kentucky chopped you up. All right. So
you laughed at me when I told you that about a month
ago. I did not laugh at you about that. I've watched Western Kentucky for years. I know they can spin it. Might run for negative yards every game, but they're going to throw it around the yard. All right. When you look at the Big Ten, the Big Ten's getting one team in. It's likely going to be Ohio State or Michigan, because I expect whoever wins the game in the Big House this weekend to beat Wisconsin. I'm not sure that's surprising. I expect there to be possibly a Big 12 champion that gets in. I think the best chance for the Big 12s is Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma's flawed right now. Not saying they can't get things righted. They still have great talent. They still have great quarterback play. But this Oklahoma State team defensively, they are the most complete team in the Big 12 right now.
Yes.
Okay, they have one loss. If they can win against Oklahoma this weekend in the Battle of Bedlam and then beat Baylor in the Big 12 championship, assuming Baylor wins this weekend, Oklahoma State will be in.
I think Baylor beats Texas Tech and gets in this weekend. But honest question, just your opinion right now. I don't want no schedule, no resume, no quality wins, game metrics, game control. Oklahoma State, Baylor, neutral field right now. Who do you take?
Oklahoma State.
Oh, because you said Baylor about a week ago.
I really like Baylor. I'm a little bit concerned. I was actually very proud of their performance on the road at Kansas State this weekend. That's a tough place to play. Senior day, Skylar Thompson's a good quarterback. Chris Kleiman's a good coach. That's a good win. and one that you can't take for granted. But I'm just the tiniest bit concerned right now with what Oklahoma State has done defensively. I don't know if Baylor's going to be able to really create a lot offensively.
It's fair.
I think they're good. I don't know if they're great. And that Oklahoma State defense is good, but I think this weekend we might come away with it. If they shut down Oklahoma like I expect them to, we might be saying that they're great. So I think the Big 12 gets a team in, possibly. Best chance being Oklahoma State. If Baylor beats Oklahoma State, I think the Big 12's out. Cincinnati then is in. Oh, and Notre Dame would be the biggest beneficiary to chaos being in the Big 12, the ACC, and the Pac-12. So Notre Dame might be in. Alabama beats Georgia, they might be in. We got a lot of chaos coming here in the next couple weeks.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
If I'm going to fast forward, I think the playoff is going to be as follows. 1, Georgia. 2, Ohio State. 3, Cincinnati. 4, Notre Dame. How crazy am I?
You're not crazy because of a lot of what you just laid out. That a lot of these teams are going to play one another and knock themselves out of contention. Certain conferences already have knocked themselves out of contention and still have big games ahead of them, so they won't even be able to enter the debate, to be perfectly honest with you. Cincinnati at 3. So not just Cincinnati getting in. And I know where you're going. I know why you're doing that. Head-to-head, have to give them the seat above, whatever. But the committee's right. Already shown that that doesn't make that much difference to them. So I might be more surprised at Cincinnati just getting a 3 seed than I would them actually getting into the college football
playoff. Fair enough,
playoff.
But I mean, it's not like Notre Dame's a juggernaut.
No.
Notre Dame's in by a process of elimination.
Let me ask you this. In your scenario, who would be the next team in the conversation if not Notre Dame?
Depends on how competitive the SEC championship game is. If Alabama loses a close game, I think they'll have a real, real argument to be made for one of those 4 playoff spots. I don't think ultimately the committee would do it. I don't think they would. Maybe they would. I don't know. Maybe they would. But I ultimately think that they would go with the 1-loss team over the 2-loss team. They've done that in the past, and we've never seen a 2-loss team make it.
And so Notre Dame's resume is better than people want to give them credit for.
Notre Dame's good.
It is.
Yeah.
All right, Daryl in Columbus. Welcome into the show, Daryl.
Hey, man. Hey, first of all, I got a couple points on, mate. But first of all, I want to say this. I have long to chat with Greg McElroy, okay? And I want him to know, I mean, I've heard Bama fans come on here and hate on him because he shoots straight from the hill. He is, first of all, he led them to a national championship, number one. Number two, he's very intelligent. He's one of the few that AC Wonder League has in the NFL. You know what, McElroy? I'm not surprised at all at how fast you've come, you know, you climbed the ladder at ESPN. You're 100 times smarter than any Alabama fan. And I've just got much respect for you.
Well, thank you for your kind words, my friend.
I think Georgia's a lot, right? The only way Cincinnati gets in, they are going to need Georgia to beat Alabama. If Alabama wins, Georgia and Alabama are both in, okay? We know that.
Yes.
I think Michigan, Ohio State winner will win that. They will get in. They'll win their conference championship. They'll get in. I think Cincinnati will move up to 4, but it's going to come down to the conference championship game. The winner of Oklahoma State, I think 1 loss, they win their conference, they're in. Notre Dame, I don't see how Notre Dame gets in because they lost Cincinnati. It would really take something for them to get in. But Cincinnati is the only way I see Cincinnati getting in is if Georgia beats Alabama. If Alabama wins, Georgia and Alabama is definitely in. Then I'm saying Ohio State of Michigan and Oklahoma State. Let me say one more thing real quick. I want to comment on the Florida situation. I don't think the big problem there is really Dan Mullen. I think the problem there is Florida itself, and I want y'all's opinion on this. If you're going to fire coaches, you wait and do it till when the season is over. When you fire, unless it's like something personal they did or something like that, when you fire them midseason, you're going to lose the team more than likely, and you can't put that on Mullen. I ain't saying they should keep Mullen, but I think they got bigger issues down there down in Florida. My opinion, want to get y'all's thoughts on that. Go Dawgs.
Thank you, Daryl. I am always a proponent of allowing a coach to finish the season. I said it publicly. I'm appreciative of what Scott Woodward's doing with Ed Orgeron at LSU because I was on an Auburn team that fired their coach midseason. I saw how that went. Most assistant coaches at that point, 1 foot out the door. And I'm not mad at them, and I don't blame them. They have families to worry about. They have employment status to worry about. They need to know where they're going to be the next year. Practice time gets cut in half. Meeting times get cut down. Film session gets cut down. What does that do to a football player? Your development is squashed for the rest of that season. You're not getting the proper coaching that you need to become a better football player that year, moving on to the following year. And then, obviously, you don't have the continuity. You don't have the chemistry, at least sustained for a little bit through the rest of that season. So I'm always appreciative of ADs that let a coach finish. But Scott said he gave Dan the option to coach this team.
Yeah.
And he didn't want it. So at that point in time, he walked away. You can't be mad at a guy who's saying, you're firing me, but you want me to come do a job that you're not letting me have anymore? I mean, that's part of that doesn't really work. So I don't know when these guys are supposed to do this. You know, you also say, if you know you're going to fire a coach, just fire the coach. What are you waiting on?
Yeah, what's
the point? Just go ahead and do it. Just go ahead and make the move. So I like letting a coach finish out the season. It's his team. Let him ride it out, even if he knows it's going to happen at the end of the year. But a lot of these decisions are not made by the people that we think make them.
Yeah, and I think at this point now, it's just accelerated everything because you want to get going as far as the early sign day is concerned.
That has changed the course of this entire action.
There's nobody dislikes the early signing day more than me. It's the worst.
Do we need a dissertation on that?
Well, no, that's all I need to say. There's nothing else to say. 855-242-PAUL. You can always join the show on the phone lines. You can also tweet in at Feinbaum, at Cole Kublik, at Greg McElroy. If you say really mean things, we won't say them on the air, but Koobs might put them in a graphic. We'll see. When we come back, we're going to get outside the footprint, tell you some of the big rivalry games across the country, next on the Feinbaum Show.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
All right, welcome back in. Paul Feinbaum Show, Cole Kublik, Greg McElroy filling in for Paul today. Monday of rivalry week. Now, you're on the Egg Bowl Thursday. Outside of the Iron Bowl, this game here. Auburn and Alabama.
I feel like we need to replace your Auburn helmet with a Kentucky helmet after you waxed poetic a few minutes ago about...
I've only done 77 Kentucky games the last 3 years. I feel like I've educated enough on the topic that I should at least mention some of the good qualities they have there in the lovely city of Lexington, including the sweet potato side right there at Tony's that you have to have. Take the Egg Bowl out of it, too, because you're working that game. What rivalry game next this weekend would you be most looking forward to?
In the SEC or outside?
Any of them.
I can go anywhere?
Anywhere.
I mean, you'd be remiss if you don't say Ohio State, Michigan. I mean, I know that right now everybody's looking at Ohio State saying that group's a juggernaut. Michigan can't keep up with them. I think Michigan matches up pretty well. And as crazy as that may sound, when I look at Ohio State and the misdirection and the kind of deception that Michigan will use in their run game with guys going across the ball, using fullbacks, using multiple tight ends, giving you a lot of different looks, this Ohio State team is vulnerable against the run, which makes Michigan State's game plan even more mind-boggling that the number one running back in college football is Kenneth Walker, and he had 6 carries. It makes no sense. You're going to get a heavy dose of Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum. You're going to get, I think, the quarterback situation at Michigan, everyone seems to think it's just okay. I think it's very good.
He's sporadic,
but he's got some gamer to him. Like, he's not Tom Brady, but he's kind of high risk, high reward. He's got a little gunslinger to him. I think he's got some game.
He might not even be Drew Henson.
Who?
Exactly.
The baseball player?
After he played at Michigan, yes.
That's high praise.
That's okay. All great. That's all nice. Just honestly, can they cover Ohio State? Michigan will run the ball. That's going to happen. Michigan's going to run the football.
I think they can get pressure.
I think they can get pressure as well off the edge.
I don't know if they can.
However,
cover.
A lot of those balls come out quick from CJ Stroud. Right. So will the pressure even impact the game that much? I'm excited about it. Don't get me wrong. I'm with you. I think physically Michigan matches up very well. To me, you have to take the air out of this football game. It's the only way. And you just mentioned it with Michigan State. I felt like the only way they were going to even compete with Ohio State was for Kenneth Walker to get loose and go wild in that game. 6 for 25 wasn't going to be enough. I don't care what the score dictated. He had to be a bigger part of that game plan. I think Michigan has to control the clock. They have to give Ohio State, I'm talking like 7 or 8 possessions in this game. And then you get a play from a Hutchinson or somebody else. You get a strip sack. You find a way to get a fumble, an interception. Somehow you make Ohio State make a mistake. You take advantage of that. That's the only path I see for Michigan to be competitive or maybe even win this football game.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to create a couple short fields. And like you said, they're going to have to be methodical. When you look at Ohio State defensively and how they've adjusted. Now, they made a change. They had to look internally. They removed play calling responsibility from Kerry Combs. I think that was the right move. No disrespect to Kerry Combs, but they were just far too simple with what they were being on the defensive side of the football. They've made the adjustment, gone to Matt Barnes. They now are doing a little bit more two high safety looks. And they're using a little bit more crazy chaos with their pass rush. They're like flying all over the place. And sometimes those linebackers, they're almost too athletic for their own good. Over pursuing, there's big rush lanes there. I think Michigan's going to run the ball extremely well in this game.
I agree with that.
They're going to, and they're going to get some points. I'm worried about their defense, naturally. But if their pass rush can get home against an offensive line that's gettable, for as big and as strong and as talented as they may be, that offensive line is gettable. I think that game's going to be closer than a lot of people think. We will continue on final hour here on a Monday edition of the Feinbaum Show.